And that's kind of where my journey started, is I had the surgery, did the protocols that they told me to do, had very successful surgery, lost weight just like they said I would. And about month six or month seven, I kind of hit a stall. I started at about 335 pounds. I lost 12 the first 2 weeks going through a liquid diet. And they have you go on a liquid diet so that they can shrink the organs, get the fat off the organs inside so they can maneuver around and have a clear field of vision to do what they need to do. And so coming out of that surgery, I lost an additional 45 pounds or so. So I was probably 60 pounds, 65 pounds from my 320. But I actually gained 10 pounds. I went backwards. And so I got very upset. I started looking online for keto. And that's the first time I ever heard intermittent fasting.
Welcome back to another episode of Cultivating Change, everyone. Thank you for sharing some of your precious time with me. I'm your host, Alex Corey, and today's guest has a story that I've not ever heard before, and it's extremely inspiring, and I hope you find the same level of motivation and passion that I did. This is Dane Johnson. Dane is a fellow Primal Health Coach Institute attendee, soon to be graduate. He's on his last chapter right now. And the fascinating thing about Dane was that he came to it after the fact. So he actually went through sort of the last resort surgery, as he would call it, for weight reduction. That is a type of gastrectomy. That's vertical sleeve gastrectomy. That's VSG. I think I actually swapped the letters during the podcast. I do that sometimes. Dane's story actually starts after his surgery, and that's how he came to the ancestral or genetically consistent or primal model, the framework laid out by Mark Sisson, founder, and all of his different research and books. And Dane's thriving when adopting a lot of those lifestyle, nutritional, and transformative habits, which he credits with his consistent weight reduction in general, just new outlook on life. I hope you find this story as inspiring as I do, and hopefully it gives anyone in that same predicament going into VSG surgery some framework and hope for afterwards. And that's who Dane hopes to impact through his coaching. Like I said, he'll be graduating soon. We'll touch on that after the podcast. Enjoy this talk with Dane Johnson. Thanks so much for doing this, Dane.
You bet. I'm glad to be here. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. You're a fellow Primal Health Coach Institute classmate or student in that pursuit of genetic exploration, is the way I like phrasing it. And everyone has their own story or way that they find that modality of living, and especially that that school, which sort of gives you the framework of why everything works, but people find it in themselves in their own journey. So you have a fascinating, very specific, I've never heard anything like it before, journey into the primal lifestyle or the ancestral or genetically consistent lifestyle. So if you could just give a little backstory as to how you first found Mark Sisson, who obviously is the godfather of the primal movement, but how you even, what led you to the search for health?
Well, that kind of takes me back a little bit in history. As we spoke before, I've struggled with my weight pretty much all my life. And at the time, I didn't realize that I probably had an addiction to food, and it was a comfort for me. I had some things that happened in my life early on that led that kind of down that road. And I've yo-yo dieted. I've been in really good shape. I've run marathons in my 30s, and had probably be very what I would consider very good shape. 215 pounds at 6'3", and running a sub-4 hour marathon. So, but I've also been in very bad shape, and as high as 335, 340 pounds. And so I've yo-yoed all my life, and the last yo-yo has happened when I moved up to Oklahoma City. I had a job where I was working with physicians and building physician facilities, and I had kind of carte blanche to do what I needed to do from a restaurant, hosting meetings, traveling, and just kind of not thinking about worrying about diet. And so
Right.
I ballooned up to about as big as I had ever gotten, which was about 340 pounds. And so I had a friend who had talked to me about doing weight loss surgery, specifically a sleeve surgery or a vertical sleeve gastrectomy. And so, and he did it in Mexico. And so that was a little daunting, and I was immediately, no, I would never do that. And he said, well, did, it worked for him. I did a lot of research on it. I mean, I probably spent 6 months looking at it, watching videos. I actually spoke to the surgeon himself, who was educated in the United States and probably speaks better English than both of you and I do.
Yes, usually
But
that's the way that works.
he is from Piedras Negras, which is just across Eagle Pass from San Antonio.
Gotcha.
Anyway, so I did the crazy. I decided that's what I wanted to do. And so after all the research that I did and went down, had the surgery, came back. And there's a whole process to the
I was going
surgery.
to say, what is the, how do you land on VGS as an option? Like at what's the mindset or what was your mindset when you started looking for that? What would make you consider that? 'Cause I hadn't heard of that before of that surgery. So at what point do you seriously start considering something like that?
Well, it's funny. I'm a Dallas Cowboy fan, and there was a football player. He was an offensive lineman named Nate Newton. They called him the Fridge. You probably heard of Nate
Oh,
Newton
yeah.
before. Nate Newton tipped the scale at about 370 pounds when he was playing football, and right now he weighs 190 pounds.
Whoa.
And because he did it with the gastric sleeve,
Gotcha.
so I knew that was a procedure. And so I always kind of had it in the back of my mind, how do you do that? What are they doing? What makes it so successful? Why even think about it? And so when I started doing research on it, it's one of the safest. You very rarely have any complications with it. There is one called a gastric bypass, where they actually take the lower intestine and they bypass the stomach and they make a little pouch in that intestine that becomes your new stomach. That works as well, but there's all kinds of more issues, problems that can arise from that. And that's usually for BMIs that are above 35. Well, my BMI is probably around 28, 29. I was approaching, that area, but those people are probably, 150 to 200 pounds overweight. They have a lot of weight that they have to lose.
BMI for anyone listening is body mass index. So that's just a calculation, rough calculation based on height and weight. So it's not super specific. It doesn't take into account a lot,
Correct.
but yeah, if
Yeah.
you're pushing those high numbers, there's not a lot of extra variables in there. It's just you're holding a lot of mass.
Right. And so I was looking for safe, looking for effective. It's very invasive. So they go in with the ports and it's all laparoscopic. Very little scarring at all. I have a couple of small little holes that you'd have to really look really hard at my abdomen to find them. And the recovery is very fast. So you literally go in, have the surgery. When you come out and they wake you up, they want you up and walking. And so your next 24 hours, you're in the surgery suite, for like a hospital bed. But it's nicer than a hospital. I mean, the place down in Mexico when I went down there, it was like the Taj Mahal. I mean,
Oh, wow.
I worked in the surgery center business where we built outpatient surgery centers, and this is probably the nicest one I've ever seen. So just because it's in Mexico didn't mean it was
Right.
cheap. I got quality care. And we can talk about the physician later, but I felt like that it was a very invasive surgery, very safe, very effective. They say you can lose up to 75 pounds of the weight that you're over your norm. So something might hang on, 75% of the weight that you are over your norm.
Okay.
So if you're 100 pounds overweight, you're going to lose 75% of that weight with this surgery, and basically just from having the surgery. Now, and that's kind of where my journey started, is I had the surgery, did the protocols that they told me to do, had very successful surgery, lost weight just like they said I would. And about month six or month seven, I kind of hit a stall. And let me back up just a little bit. Now, coming out of that that surgery, there's not a lot of diet or nutritional advice that they give you, except you want to eat more of a keto lifestyle diet. And we all know that keto lifestyle diet can mean a spectrum of
Right.
things. I mean, it could go from one side to the other. And especially nowadays with intermittent feeding patterns and everything else, you just don't, I mean, there is no keto style of eating. You kind of tailor it now, and going through the Primal Health coaching, you really can zoom in on people who are particular issues here and there. It's not one size fits all. We can kind of create it for their individual needs, which is what I really like.
Just to give some context to everyone, whenever someone says that, clinical ketosis, so what they would use in the past is 80% fat of your total nutrition, 20% anything else, protein and carbs, obviously. Most people aren't at that. That's what they would use for like epilepsy or serious issues. What most people think of now is the more common parlance of you can measure 0.5 millimole of ketone bodies in your bloodstream. So that is, you're in ketosis. So that's what most people will think of for when you say keto, like any lifestyle that will generate that presence of ketones in your body.
And I think the big thing was, you do want to eat a lower carb lifestyle, is kind of what they said. And I think that in general, they were saying anywhere below 50 grams of carbs is where they'd like to see you land. And so they had an app that we would follow on our phone, and we could put our food in, what we're eating. And they had somebody here in the States who would reach out to you if they saw something that was you looking like you're struggling in certain areas, but it wasn't anything like Primal Health coaching would be. So it's not anything like that. But anyway, so I did. I hit a stall about month six or month seven, and got really frustrated because I did, that this is the other thing about having this surgery. Insurance does not cover it. And so when you have surgery outside the United States, you basically pay for your way. And so a surgery like that can range anywhere from 6 grand on the low side. And in the States, it can range up to upwards of $25,000, just depending on who you go with, if you fund it yourself. In another life, I have dealt with weight loss physicians, bariatric physicians, and most of the time in the United States, they want you to go through a series of diets and other items prior to going through the surgery, and they use surgery as, quote, a last resort. So this way you kind of can skip all that, and you go right to the procedure and get it done. So 6 7 months out, struggling, and I say struggling, I hit a stall. I had lost approximately 45 to 50 pounds when I hit the stall. So I started at about 335 pounds. I lost 12 the first 2 weeks going through a liquid diet.
Mm-hmm.
And they have you go on a liquid diet so that they can shrink the organs, get the fat off the organs inside so they can maneuver around and have a clear field of vision to do what they need to do. And so coming out of that surgery, I lost an additional 45 pounds or so. So I was probably 60 pounds, 65 pounds from my 320. But I actually gained 10 pounds. I went backwards. And so I got very upset. I started looking online for keto. And the first person I ran into is an influencer on YouTube. Her name is Autumn Bates, and she's a certified dietitian. And she specializes in keto. And that's the first time I ever heard intermittent fasting was from her. And so I was in ketosis, at least I thought I was, because I was losing the weight. Later I had purchased later I have purchased a blood monitor so I can test to make sure that I am. But so I started doing some of the things she had, which was doing more walking, drinking more water. I took my carbs down to 30 or less, and I started to make some progress again. I started losing a little bit, and I kind of picked a little momentum, and I got hooked on looking for more of that. I didn't know what that was, but I wanted more of the keto. I'm learning more about it because, again, when you look, there is so much information that you can get information overload, and you don't know which way to go. You kind of almost get paralyzed by as all the data.
Analysis paralysis. Yeah, there's so
Exactly,
much.
exactly. So I happened upon on YouTube. No, it wasn't YouTube. It was Joe Rogan. Mark Sisson went on Joe Rogan, and I'm an avid Rogan listener, and so I was listening to him, and he started talking about keto. And I said, "Hey, this is pretty cool. I'll just listen to it for a little while." And it really, I don't know if you've heard the interview on Rogan, but it picks up at about minute 40, and then Mark goes into Mark mode and just lays it out so you can play it out. And so when I heard that, dude, I was like, "Oh my gosh, that was almost like a lightning bolt that hit me." And I did everything Mark says, and I found him on, I found all his talks, listened to all his talks, watched his YouTube stuff, read his books. I got his books on audio, and I've listened to them multiple times. And then I heard about the Primal Health Coaching Certification, and I kind of got the epiphany that if I can do this for me, which I did, and ultimately I lost over 100 pounds, and I went from 325, the lowest I got was about 218. I sit at about, oh, 230 pounds right now, but I'm somewhere around 24% body fat. So the number on the scale that doesn't mean that much to me anymore now that I understand, how the body is put together.
I hope you're enjoying the podcast, everyone. I absolutely love talking to people about health and about what helped them on their journey to find optimal health. And if you're one of those people who finds yourself tinkering with your own health and loves inspiring others and pulling the best out of others on their framework, on their journey to their own optimal health, if you've ever thought about becoming a health coach and helping others making an impact in that area, I can't recommend Primal Health Coach Institute enough. They provide the literature, the framework, the business concepts, everything you need to actually build a successful health coaching business that pulls from ancestral nutrition, fitness, all of that genetically consistent strategies that a lot of the new and emerging literature is quickly pointing towards as being able to help people reveal their genetic blueprint and work towards optimizing their own health. If health coaching is something you're interested in, always check out the links in the podcast for booking a discovery call with Primal Health Coach Institute. It's been instrumental in helping me make a successful business impacting others through health.
And so, but I did sign up for the coaching. It's taken me a little longer because I do have a real job, and but I've learned so much, and I feel like my calling is to work with other people who have had the same surgery that I've had, but are struggling and are kind of not knowing where they need to go. And
Yeah,
so
it's such a specific niche. I hadn't heard of that specific
procedure before, so no one will quite know the mindset, the experiences, the hurdles, the barriers quite like someone else who has been through that. I think you're the perfect person to be a guide.
Right. And I think the thing that you got to look at too, I did some research just looking, but most studies show that about 20 to 30% of the people who have had the surgery will gain some or all the weight back. So it's not a, look, it's a tool. The great thing is my stomach is probably it's smaller than a normal person's stomach, which gives me the ability to stop eating and say I'm full and walk away from the table. I have to eat multiple smaller meals a day to keep my nutrition up rather than because I can't just take in, you know, a 16-ounce steak. I can't take in a huge salad. In fact, keto is really good for me because you eat any kind of bread, you immediately stuffed full. And so it just doesn't work. I feel like I can really relate to people who are in this position in life, coming out of that, spending the money, thinking it was the end all be all and only to be another disappointment. And so I feel like that's where I'm going to plant my flag and move forward with. And in fact, I have a meeting next week with my surgeon down in Mexico. I'm actually going down there and I'm going to visit with him about possibly working with him with the patients he has that are struggling and see what maybe we can work something out.
Yeah. I mean, the lifestyle, the nutrition, all of the other factors that hit your genetics. And the nice thing, what I absolutely love about the ancestral or primal model is that instead of focusing on calories, it focuses on signaling, meaning what are you telling your body? Everything, every environmental stimulus, everything you do sends a signal. How do your hormones, regardless of what you think you're doing, what do your hormones think you're doing based off of what's hitting them? So you learn about, you know, it's the de facto anti-inflammatory hormone optimizing everything because that's what it's built around. It's
right.
What are you at baseline? Where's your insulin? You learn, I'm assuming the entire premise behind shrinking your stomach, other than physical volume, is reduction in ghrelin, which is your hunger hormone.
Yep. So that's a huge. So they actually when they do the cutting of on the surgery, they literally have a tool that cuts and staples at the same time.
Oh wow!
And what he does is he takes the lobe side out. So, you know, if you look at your stomach, you got a rounded side on one edge and the other straight. He'll go on that lobe side, which has 75% of the ghrelins in the lobe. And so I don't feel hunger like you would feel hunger. Right. My hunger is I start getting tired.
Yep.
I physically get tired. And that was the weirdest thing to really feel for the first time. And it's like, why do I feel so tired? And they say, you're probably hungry. And I ate something and I felt better.
Yeah.
The other thing that they tell you not to do, and I've held fast to it, which I think has really helped me, is don't do carbonated drinks.
Yeah.
Carbonated drinks, you can cheat your sleeve. You can drink carbonated drinks, but I haven't had a carbonated drink in over 2.5 years. And I used to be a mad monster drinker.
Yeah.
Diet Coke drinker, you know, light beer drinker, that kind of stuff. Yeah. And I haven't had any of that in over 2.5 years. So that's also helped with my, you know, with my health. And so, and it's, you know, it's helped with my type. I had borderline type 2 diabetes. I was taking metformin and I was taking shots in the stomach. I was doing all those things as well. I am not on a prescription medication. About 6 months ago, I got all off all of it.
Thyroid That's amazing. Medication,
the type 2 metformin, all that's gone now. The only thing I do take is I'm losing my brain.
It's all right. We'll come back to you.
We'll come back to it.
The but other anyway, thing so that I can think
as
of.
As soon as it hits me, I'll tell you.
The weird thing people notice whenever they first start becoming fat adapted, and you can tell me your experience with this, that's a weird concept for people when you learn that, because the whole Marxism and and that movement's whole fire is when you realize that A, most people suck at burning fat, not because you're not built for it. That's your genetic birthright. You are a fat burning machine. We just uncondition ourselves from doing that, from eating so much, but from such high carbohydrate meals. Usually we never give our bodies the chance to even remember how to burn fat. So whenever you hear Mark talk about becoming a dual energy burning machine and sort of unleashing your full capability, people are like, wait, why? What does that mean? How do you do that? So to become fat adapted, which is the terminology meaning you have to slowly recondition your mitochondria, which are the power plants of your cells, make more of them, which is mitochondrial biogenesis, and then teach your body how to A, liberate fat and then burn it efficiently. And there's lots of different things you can do, lots of slow aerobic, so that's cardio. So heart rate variability, there's all these tools you can use, but the fat adaption process is so weird because it usually happens slowly. And on our first conversation, you mentioned keto flu, which is what a lot of people will be familiar with, which is the traditional, before there was this like stepwise approach for slowly knocking carbohydrates down and teaching your body that, people would just go cold turkey. Full keto, you just go from a normal American, like 500 grams of carbs, almost your entire day of carbs, down to like 50, and your body just freaks out because you feel like dying because you don't have the machinery to process fat, nor are you good at liberating fat. And even if you are, water stores, or I'm sorry, carbohydrates and muscle glycogen, which is what you're going to purge, before your body even touches fat, you'll deplete all of your stored sugar, yes, your glycogen in your muscles. And that's quite a few hundreds of grams, and the water goes with it. And when the water goes, your electrolytes go. So the keto flu is this vicious, unpleasant combination of just lethargy, usually cramps, brain fog, because you're losing all of your water, all your electrolytes, and your body thinks it has no energy. Right. It's not a great feeling. Thankfully, there's ways to avoid that now because we know what causes it. But when it was starting to become a more popular thing, the stories were a little rough. I mean, it was kind of like people going on a juice fast, where for the first couple of days, it was just brutal until your body spun up those mitochondria and figured out how to pull fat. But you don't have to go through that anymore. The thing I wanted to... What was your process of becoming fat adapted? Because it's usually, you mentioned that you don't feel hunger like most people. So that's what I noticed. It was, instead of just being ravenous, where your body just like kicks up cortisol because you ran out of blood sugar and it just needs a quick boost of sugar. And most people get panicky, you know, you start getting shaky because your blood sugar plummets. What you notice, or what I noticed when I was doing that, was I don't get hangry anymore. I just start getting tired. That's the cue that you're running out of energy. What was your process of learning that?
Well, I think it's very similar to yours. Of course, you know, I hadn't really gotten too deep into primal health as far as going through. I mean, I read the books. I was in the process of reading the books, but immediately when I listened to it and heard Mark talk, the first thing I did is I did probably what you shouldn't do, and that was to go, you know, cold turkey, smooth into it. Let's just get this thing. I've been on Atkins diets before and read Dr. Atkins book and that kind of thing. And I've had that feeling before, but I remember trying to do some workouts on that early on when I was doing Atkins diet, and you can't do anything. I mean, you talk about feeling lethargic. You can't hardly lift weights. You're just real shaky. You have no energy, like you were saying. Right. And so that feeling lasted for me about 4 or 5 days, and I came out the other side and I actually started doing better. Right. What really blew my mind on all that is when I started reading more. You know, they talk about heart rate variability, like you were talking about. Yep. But they, you know, Mark brings in Dr. Maffetone.
Yes.
And so I got his book. I keep it right here with me. It's one of my, I don't know if you can see it. So
it's that. I'll link it in the show notes.
Okay. Yeah. So it's the endurance training and the big book of endurance and training and racing. And that's my Bible. And so, I trained and ran, two half marathons last year. One was in the Oklahoma City Memorial Marathon, and then Tulsa has a Route 66. And I ran both of those. Average heart rate was somewhere around 135. For me, the 180s minus my age would put me around 125 to 128. So I was a little higher for the average, but I held my own and I accomplished what I wanted to do in the time frame I wanted to do it. And I felt great. I walked away from that and just felt great. And so I just couldn't believe that that worked. In trying to train that way, being out of shape, my heart rate would get to 140 just, walking out the door. And now I do about an hour of cardio on four different machines, 15 minutes each, and I usually have an average heart rate when I'm done of about 136 is about what I average. And I always run last, and a lot of times I'll incorporate some sprinting like Mark talks about. Perfect. On the last part of that. So that's usually why my heart rate gets a little higher at the end. Was that, but I really, really like, I do a lot of run walk now, and I there's days I just walk and just go out. And so, but that has changed my life from a workout standpoint. My mindset as a younger adult and going in and working out, and you probably have heard this as well, as a guy, you go big or go home. And so heart rate, 120 heart rate, pick it up, dude. You need to pick it up, and it's the opposite. And so, I used to train and would be in the 155 to 165 range at in my mid 40s. And that's bad. That's terrible. I'm hitting the fight or flight mechanism in my body. And now I've got cortisol being released. My adrenal glands are firing. And I think I'm doing good. And then I get home and 2 days later, 3 days later, I haven't really seen any kind of results from anything. And so, and that was the other thing that Mark has really pushed on me is that, your big losses are in the kitchen. Your refining is in the gym. And so a lot of people like to go to the gym thinking that's what's going to solve your problem. And it's not. The problem starts at the kitchen. And Primal Health has really changed my life from that aspect, that now we're looking at making food fun again. Enjoy cooking, enjoy just spending time with my wife cooking. And we make stuff we would normally never eat. And the smells and then sitting down and having maybe, Mark talks about having a glass of red wine, that kind of thing. I don't do a lot of that, but it does makes for, on the weekends especially. And being fat adapted, it means I'm metabolically flexible, which you can talk about too. But the fact that I am fat adapted and I go have, a special treat like a piece of cheesecake, my body doesn't automatically flip back to carb burning as a machine. It stays that. So I can have that cheat meal. I can have that. I don't do it a lot, but you can. And it just makes life so much to me. I feel like I'm in control of it, whereas before I was not.
That's so powerful. Yeah, that's why you do it. And that's the empowering part about guiding others through that is when they get that feeling. Like I had one client who just thrived on intermittent fasting. He was a shorter, bulkier guy and just realized that his energy levels were through the roof if he just stopped eating at 2. It almost didn't matter what he ate. I mean, we went over that a lot, but if he stopped eating at 2 in the morning, he could still crush like high intensity workouts. His cognition and his clarity was sky high just from allowing your body that recovery time. Yeah, timed feeding windows and intermittent fasting is one of those tools that just crosses all of the dietary boundaries. And let me quickly give a little context to what you're saying prior for people who are slightly lost. The MAF that we're talking about is maximum aerobic fitness. So that's Dr. Maffetone's formula. If you're going to a gym or you're talking to a personal trainer, and this was beat into us, I did personal training for a while. There's a couple of very specific formulas for how to calculate someone's zone where their heart rate should be. And it's done by age, gender, a whole bunch of variables. What Dr. Maffetone found was that he just averaged thousands of his athletes and basically got rid of the complexity and nuance. And he was like, out of everyone, if you take 180 and subtract your age and you stay around or below that, that's your perfect aerobic zone. If you go over that, you're probably going to start just cranking through carbs and creating a lot of oxidative damage, which is what you're talking about with black hole cardio, which is that zone where you're not yet at like 85 or 90% your max, where your adrenaline kicks in and your stress hormones should kick in. That's your sprinting. That's a lot of your high intensity weightlifting. That's where you're building stress resilience. You don't want to do that all the time because it is very hard on your body and you're creating a lot of damage necessary to grow. But most people hang out, like you said, in that go big or go home. So way over their 180 minus their age, but well below their 90%. So you're basically just in this zone where your body has no idea what's going. There's no clear signal. It's not we're trying not to die, and it's not we're taking it easy and just burning fat. There's a weird, and there's all sorts of charts and graphs that tell you what percentage of fat and carbs you're trying to build. That's that no one cares about because most people train there too much. Right. And yeah, what Primal is really good at is like, yeah, try to either stay in the enjoyable range where you're definitely, you know, you have plenty of oxygen for fat, which is why that's aerobic is fat production or fat liberation and metabolism. Beta oxidation takes a lot of oxygen. It's a slower process. It's a cleaner burning process. Doesn't generate as much waste reactive oxygen species. So your body doesn't have to clean up as much and there's less recovery, but for like a HIIT workout or something where you just need a ton of energy, if you haven't built those mitochondria, you're just going to run out of energy. And there's plenty of people in the fitness field. Thomas DeLauer always comes to mind because he has such good information where once you've built all of that metabolic machinery, you know, you can crush a high intensity workout as good as anyone else, even fasted. You don't need to all the time, but that's the cool part about learning how your body works and recalibrating all those mechanisms is once you start rebuilding your capacity and you don't have to live off of carbs anymore, it is so freeing. Like you just don't have to really, like you said, you're more in control. Eating doesn't rule your life anymore.
You're correct.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's funny you brought up Thomas DeLauer. There's a YouTube video where he's actually interviewing Mark, and it's a great watch. So
yeah, they're both fluid speakers, and they both Thomas has a similar story where he was quite overweight. He didn't do the procedure you did. He didn't do VGS, but he lost 100 plus pounds on keto, and he's on top of the science, and he's very non-dogmatic and just likes presenting nutritional info as it comes out. Great inspirational guy. I always recommend his channel because paying attention to nutrition is overwhelming, even for someone paying attention to nutrition, because it changes so much, and there's so many different. It's kind of like learning IT or learning medical, where just learning the acronyms get overwhelming if you're paying attention to the literature. So he's a great presenter of the information where, you know, you don't need to know all of the different, I geek out on a lot of the metabolism because that's what I like, NRF2 pathways and reactive oxygen species. And I do water and hydration, which works off the same sort of stuff. It's working off those those detoxification pathways. But you don't need to know all that to make these sweeping changes in your life. It's nice to know why you feel the way you do and be able to pull the levers like you discovered. But for people who just want to make to get healthy, yeah, the food is 80%. That's the primal yep. model. 80% yep. of everything, and then 20% is your movement, whatever movement you choose. Lifestyle plays a big role, and I think a lot of people are figuring out stress, sleep, and stress.
That's a big one. I have a Garmin watch that yep. that tracks my sleep and it tracks my variable heart rate and some of these other things. And you know, I can tell when I've had bad sleep, and I'll look at it and it'll tell me that you had bad sleep. But it also tells me when I can see my heart rate, the variability of it. When it goes down, mm-hmm. I need to rest. I don't need to work out. My body is at a low point, and it's needing that rest and to refuel and build back up. And it's amazing that, you know, I've had this watch for now 2 years, and I've actually finally started using pretty much all aspects of it to keep track. And there's a lot of things going on in your body you just don't really realize. A normal lay person who goes to work, comes back, and just lives a life does not realize the different things, different components that are going in and working, and they don't have a clue. And I've tried, I've got a number of close friends of mine who are my age, and they struggle with weight and they work out. And I try to talk to them a little bit about, the Maffetone method, mm-hmm. go getting fat adapted, start looking at the carbs that you're taking in and start backing off on those. And it's in one ear out the other. And they'll send me their workouts, and yep. they'll have like a max heart rate of average heart rate of 165, 170. I'm like, dude, you're killing yourself, man. You're not 35 anymore. And so I think it's hard for people to, when you've been trained and you've been set up to eat a certain way and to lift a certain way and to try to run a certain way. I think it's best for one of the biggest things you can do is just go walk.
Walk's amazing. Walk. Yeah.
Get the steps in, Great. Autumn Bates, she hammered it. Get steps in every day. And she would give it, you need to start out at 8,000 steps, and you need to be, once you get kind of adapted to that, you need to be 12,000 to 16,000 steps a day. Yeah, and it had to be all at one time, just in and out. And it made so much sense after I got introduced to Primal Health.
Right. So, yeah. The literature on 6,000 plus steps for like basically all cause chronic illness prevention. So it was for diabetes, it was for a whole lot of neurological conditions. I mean, Parkinson's, and there was probably a list of 12 conditions: blood pressure regulation, blood sugar regulation, lipid regulation. Literally every part about your body responds favorably to walking, because it is the lowest impact thing that moves lymph, moves blood. Your body really likes circulation and plenty of oxygen, obviously. And even power walking, some people will try to overcomplicate it a little bit and try to like push their, it's probably the easiest way to start getting fit is just walk. And you'll notice your VO2 max and your respiratory capability like skyrocket quickly. You'll be able to double your distances very quickly. There's no barrier.
Yeah. When I train, it's kind of, I don't know what the temperature is there, but here it's still in the wintertime. And so it's been a little cold to get outside and I do a lot of run walking outside. But as soon as the weather gets to the point, probably in the next, 3 or 4 weeks, I'll start back into my training outside. And I just love going out there. And, I do a long run once a week, and that can put me somewhere around, I say long run for me, it would be anywhere from 7 to 9 miles.
That's long.
And it's a run walk. And so, but I enjoy it. I get out in early in the morning and get it in and get done. And, and then I can start the rest of my day on, and it's usually on a weekend. And so I can rest up and have a really good, that you do that, you think you're tired, but that really slingshots you into a day where you have more energy than you think you would.
Exactly. And the weird part is I do another podcast that's the Pain Education Podcast. And on the last one, we talked about basically what you mentioned, where most people will have no idea sort of what, you know, that they're in that chronic fatigue zone. And it correlates so perfectly to the Pain Education Podcast, where our focus is first, you know, most people spend their lives in their sympathetic nervous system state. That's your fight or flight response. For your cortisol, all your stress hormones are at least slightly elevated.
That's where I was.
Right. But most people don't even know that they're in that zone, and you can't really feel it until you do some of the techniques like breathing, or we have a couple special modalities where your baseline drops. Like, you feel what it's like to be in a parasympathetic state where your nervous system calms way down, and then you're like, oh, I'm probably running at like 65% stress. And you start to be able to figure out when you can feel yourself move in that direction. And that's when all of your restorative hormones kick in, when you can get yourself back down to baseline as quickly as possible. You know, we talk about metabolic flexibility, the ability to switch from burning and tolerate both fat and carbs quickly. That's the buffer you're talking about. We talk about autonomic flexibility in that podcast, which is the sort of the rubber band ability of your nervous system to go from extremely stressed out back to baseline, rest and digest, back to parasympathetic as quickly as possible. And that's obviously what you train. You want as big a buffer as possible, because you can't avoid stress in today's world. Just stepping outside, I mean, every contaminant, most of it's mental, obviously, just things bombarding you will trigger your stress response. But you want to be able to have as much control through breath, through awareness, through nutrition. You want all of those buffers working in your favor. And whenever you learn what your baseline feels like. That correlated to walking. That's where I was going with that. Sorry about that.
No, you're good.
He said the easiest way, he being Bill Paravano, who I do the podcast with, the easiest way to find and diffuse tension patterns, those are, you know, chronic patterns that we build either through emotional responses or chronic workouts, easiest way to diffuse those so they don't become permanent tension patterns, which is what I'm working on getting rid of, is walking. And I was like, that's so interesting. Walking by itself will give your body the opportunity to sort of shake off anything that is in the process of condensing and becoming like a permanent neuromuscular pattern, which is Pravilo, which is what I do on Friday mornings, where you get stretched out on this Russian machine. That's what that's good at finding, because you can sort of calm down and you can feel into where the tension settles in your body. For me, it's in the back of my trap and in my hip. Most people, I think, will find something in their hips just because it's a center point for everything in your spine. But the importance of being able to feel when you're actually stressed and when you haven't had a good night of sleep. Like you said, like if I eat a piece of cake, I will feel my heart rate come up noticeably now.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it goes down quickly because that's the flexibility. But when you can feel your body's responses to most things, it's a double-edged sword, obviously. Some people don't want to be able to feel it that much because then you notice everything. But just feeling where your optimal baseline is a true gift. And I don't think most people discover that.
I don't disagree with that. Yeah. I've discovered mine when I went to my endocrinologist and I did my blood work and my cortisol levels were high.
Right.
And literally there was some concern that I may have had a tumor on my adrenal gland. And it turns out that I was just metabolically fatigued or adrenal fatigue, from doing all the things I used to do and drinking monster drinks on top of all that. I mean, I could do 3 or 4 a day, which is ridiculous.
And that's a high tolerance. Yeah.
That's a very high tolerance. And so, it really freaked him out when I had the surgery. I went through and I started doing a lot of the stuff that Mark had said, following the rules there. And all that just kind of calmed down and started doing the Maffetone training when I exercised. That kind of went down. And then it's just like now my resting heart rate is usually from 48 to 52. Wow. And I actually got, I went and had a medical exam for life insurance, and it's one of the best medical exams I've ever had. My blood pressure was as low as you, I mean, it was just ridiculous. It was, everything was great. And, you know, I was telling you about prescriptions, and I'm off prescriptions, yes. But the only thing I continually take now is testosterone. I am on testosterone therapy, but I legitimately have a lower testosterone level. So, but that, other than that, I don't. I do take one of the things you find when you are have the surgery that I have, you don't get it, since you can't eat as much food as right. other people, you lose the nutrients that you need. So I am on a number of supplements for, yep. you know, and I learned that more from marking them too, you know, the D3s and the, mm-hmm. you know, the Bs and, you know, all the vitamins that we talk about in primal.
Yeah. Omegas are key. Bs yeah. are key. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I have to, I take those, and I actually have, I take them in two rounds because I take so many, but other than a pre-workout before I go work out in the morning, in my supplements, that's about all I take.
And I think that's a drastic improvement probably from different types of medications. Supplementation is infinitely better. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm very pleased where I'm at now. And so, I don't know. I call it an addiction. Maybe it's not an addiction, but it feels like I want to know more so I can be better at what I do and yes. be more of a resource. I had a guy at work. He's probably in his mid 30s. He weighed about 285 pounds, and I didn't really tell him about my surgery. I'm selective about now on the podcast, everybody's going to know,
right?
But I've been selective on telling, cause it's, you know, honestly, it's none of their business, but, right. He asked me, he heard me talking about Mark Sisson and Primal, and he came in my office. He goes, hey man, what's that all about? What's the keto stuff? I've been really interested in finding out. And so I sat down and this is before I really got deep into doing my Primal training. I had joined the course. And mm-hmm. so I had heard enough of Mark. I just kind of regurgitated what Mark would say on his podcast. Yeah. And I said, you have to get your body into where you're burning fat for fuel. And so, and that's the name of my handle is Fat for Fuel.
Such a great handle. Yeah.
but Mark, you know, I told him, I said, you need to be, he goes, well, how do you do that? And I said, well, what I would suggest, and I probably gave him the wrong advice. I wanted to get him there quickly. I said, what I suggest is that you start taking in only about 30 carbs a day. Drink lots of water, and you're gonna feel a little funky for a couple of the days, but you'll come out the other side. And then what we can start doing is start increasing your carbs a little bit and start feeling better about it. And so he kind of went by the letter. He said he had one day where he kind of had a headache and that kind of thing, but he came out the other side. And so I hope I can drop names, and you're okay on your podcast.
Oh yeah, go for it.
Maria Emmerich is a huge help for me. She is a keto guru who's more on the recipes and diet book, the actual recipes of keto meals and that kind of thing. And one thing about keto to keep it up in low carb is you got to have variety. Yep. If you don't have variety in this, and that's the great thing about Primal, is you want to eat a wide variety of foods to keep you excited about food, right. And not get where you're in a rut with the same meal all the time, and you just won't make it. You may think you can make it, you won't make it. You need to find a variety, smorgasbord of food that you can eat, and you have the go-to meals you can go to, but having that variety keeps you there. And so I gave him a couple of Maria's recipes, and I would hand him, you know, I'd hand him about three or four a week, and he and his wife started cooking them and doing them, and she has a noodleless lasagna. It's amazing. Nice. And they basically, she uses deli chicken as the noodle. And when you get all that meat and cheese and the sauces on there, you cannot tell that is not a noodle. And it literally, it's like 1 gram of carbs per serving. It's ridiculous. So anyway, long story short, he followed and he did it. I think we talked about it. He did it at the wrong time of year. He was coming up he was coming right at the 1st of October, which you have Halloween with candy.
Yep.
Then you have Thanksgiving, where you have your big meal there and pies and everything else. And then you got Christmas. From that date through the first of the year, he went from 285, he went from 286 down to 215.
Wow.
Just on me coaching, and that's kind of where, say I coached him. He would come in, we would sit down, where are you at? He would show me his app. We would go through things. I would say, how are you feeling with this? How are you feeling with that? And he did zero exercise. Zero.
Right.
And so, and he's still holding it. I mean, this has been a year and a half now, and he looks great. Looks great. And he's so happy. And he comes in, he'll have his little Tupperware. He'll open it up and he'll have, you know, whatever meal they had at night was chicken or some kind of meat.
Yep.
And he has a couple of little go-to beef jerky things he eats. And he's always drinking water, and I've got him on real salt. So he's drinking the real salt water.
Awesome.
And so it fires me up when I hear people that it works on, because it does work.
Right.
It's just too easy to work, and people will not listen. And so.
Yeah, right. Well, I think, and I have this too, if it's not complex and if there's not a big hurdle, you automatically assume you can't have drastic results. What people don't understand, or maybe they do, or they're starting to, and what our job is as coaches, is you realize everything is consistency, right? It almost doesn't matter if cheat meals, you know, whatever, if you can just keep doing small stuff and get 1% better every day, you start to see those huge, like I call them compounding interest ticks, like a month in, where, yeah, you just start without doing any of the biohacker stuff. So like you said, not exercising anymore, probably not getting sunlight 3 times a day.
No.
Those are all great. Like if you can do the nutrition and then do some of the other lifestyle stuff, like it is pure gravy. Like you will feel so much different. But if you can just focus on whatever you can do and will do, especially with the household or with your partner or significant other on board, that is, social support is so huge in that area. If you can do something and control your meals, yeah, it's game over. Like if you can control the food and you enjoy eating, and it's
that's the big part.
You. Yep.
That's the big part. And what was funny is that no noodle lasagna, he's got he's a cowboy. He has a farm. I say he doesn't work out. He probably carries hay and
farm work, yeah.
Deals with cows, his son rides bulls. So he told me, he said that his boys came in, they're both in high school, one's a senior. And they sat down and had the meal, and they said it was some of the best lasagna they'd ever eaten. And they didn't tell them they didn't have any noodles.
Right.
So, I mean, it's all about, you know, it's all about mindset. And so, my wife and I, we really, really geek out on making something that would normally be very high carb into something that's not, and it has a similar, you know, feel good,
yes,
emotional connection to me on something I used to eat. And when I can find those, it's very special.
Exactly. That's one of the biggest hurdles for people with food, which is why I enjoy the water so much, is as the same drastic effects as keto, because there's an inflammatory response there. But the food issue is so tied to emotion, to conditioning, to comfort, which is why it's so hard for most people to make a dramatic shift. But as you said, you don't necessarily need to make a dramatic shift. I mean, Mark absolutely loves to eat. The entire Primal Kitchen brand that he built is literally just what he likes to drown his food in. And instead of using heavily processed seed oils like canola oil, safflower, sunflower, rapeseed, all of those, it's mostly just avocado oil. Great fatty acid profile. It tastes pretty much the same. Like the barbecue sauce is pretty close to just sugar-based barbecue sauce. You know, there's no sugar in it. So if you can make food taste just as good, you know, there's entire coaches who specialize in deconditioning from comfort food eating, but which is the biggest hurdle. I don't think you even need to get there. Like you said,
no,
you
I don't think you do. I think
that
you
taste just
a shift, make a shift on the recipe to make it tolerable. And when I say tolerable, a lot of people would give their right arm to have a chocolate chip cookie tastes right. like a chocolate chip cookie that is not specifically harming me from a diet or a seed oil or those,
right.
but something that is savory and hits the spot. And
yes.
so it's very interesting. We've done a lot of that. And that I tell you, one of the hacks we've done too that works very well. And I'll throw another name out. Keto and Court. She's out of Dallas. We follow her a lot. She's a big Maria a fan as well. And that's where we got to know Maria. But her and her husband will go through Maria's book, and there's actually meal planning at the back.
Nice.
And it'll give you breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And it'll give you 2 weeks worth. Well, if you do those recipes, start with the first one and just work your way through it. Yeah, there are going to be recipes you don't like. But guess what? You're going to find one or two or three that surprise you and go, holy crap, that's really good.
Yeah.
And you don't know that until you sit down and you can't look at the cookbook and say, I don't like that. Doesn't sound good. You got to make it. You got to try it. Half the fun of Primal is getting in the kitchen, learning about food again, get in touch with that. The smells, the just enjoyment of spending time dealing with it. And,
yes,
you know, Mark says it so much better than I do. It makes it like I want to go cook with Mark. You know, that's like one of the funnest things I've ever heard. I'd love to do that. But and that's something that we had struggled with, and we've kind of turned the corner on that with my wife and I. And so I think it makes a huge difference, again, to be brave, step out, find some of those recipes that you normally wouldn't make. Give it a shot. Give it a try. I tell somebody about noodles and use lasagna, and they just kind of go, yeah.
Right.
Well, you hadn't eaten it. You know, egg roll in a bowl. Unbelievable. It tastes like that kind of food. And it gives that feeling that you're actually enjoying that again. And it gives that little bit of, friendliness that you've had in the past.
Yes.
That makes a difference. And it's like, I'm not totally off the wagon.
Yes. Two things to touch on. One, people will be surprised at how their taste changes because, and the research on this is so trippy and weird, a lot of taste cravings comes from your microbiome. And whenever you shift the way you're eating, just the diversity of foods, different colors, if you just stop doing the heavily processed foods in general, your microbiome changes. That's the colonies of viruses, of bacteria. You know, there's a trillion of cells of bacteria in your small intestine and your colon and your gut that are dictating preferences to you. You know, there's a synergistic relationship between you feeding them and they give you certain nutrients or fermentable goods, things like that. So people's taste changes so interestingly whenever they shift their eating patterns, even for a couple of days. Like if you stop doing sugar entirely, that's not going to be fun for a little bit, but you will notice your cravings dramatically plummet because you're literally killing off a lot of the colonies that live on easily fermentable sugars. They're losing the war that other bacteria are competing with. So even if someone thinks that a recipe won't taste good, I can't stand something super sweet anymore because my sweetness tolerance is so closer to baseline where I probably couldn't eat a gummy bear without like cringing because it's just so sweet,
right.
Something like that, where your taste fluctuates so dramatically. And before I forget, I wanted to get back to something about VGS, if just to make sure we get to it. Do you think that the lifestyles and nutritional habits you've developed would have been beneficial for you pre-VGS?
Yes, I do. I think that I don't know. Here's the thing about that surgery that is very helpful. You lose quite a bit really fast.
Right.
And so, it's not easy. I mean, some people, you know, the physician, the surgeon down in Mexico, he usually does, you know, at one time he'll do four surgeries or five surgeries. And so the idea is when you go down, you meet up at a hotel in San Antonio, and then they come up and they have a really nice minibus pick you up, and they drive you to the facility into Mexico. Mm-hmm. And you kind of get to know them and their significant others. And so you're all in this together.
Yeah.
You've all done some kind of liquid diet so that you shrink the organs. But some people have done 30 days of liquid diet.
Wow.
I only had to do 10. So there was a guy who he was from Arkansas. They drove down, and he was 6'6", and he was over four bills. He was 400 pounds. Big dude.
Yeah.
But he wasn't like fat, but he was just big. You know, he went in at the same time, and I keep up with him, and he's lost probably 75 pounds. So he hasn't done as well as I've done,
mm-hmm.
but I've talked to him about Primal, and, you know, I've given him some literature and all that, and he's choose to do what he wants to do with it. But I feel like that I could have, if I had found Mark prior to that, I think it would be harder. I think that the, right. you know, I don't want to say I could do it. I don't know. But I think I would have gravitated to it. One of the things that I've always struggled with was, again, the meaning of keto.
Yeah.
You know, keto diet, keto this, keto that, you know, and counting, you know, counting all carbs, not all carbs are carbs, you know, those, you know, you've got net carbs and I, you know, I'm always telling people, you know, throw net carbs out the window right now. You want to know what carb intake you're taking.
Right.
You know, once you get to a certain place, you can play net carbs, but I don't know how you feel about net carbs, but you know, a lot of people think it's more of an advertising piece to try to
sell. I think it overcomplicates it. Yeah. I would just go with carbs.
There's something to it. I mean, Mark's talked about it a little bit, but he would prefer you to
fiber's a thing.
Worry about carbs.
Yes.
So less, you know, less noise there. If you just look at the carb intake.
Right.
But to answer your question, there is a version of me that could have probably done what I've done now with the Primal Health. I would probably need a health coach to help me through that, though.
Right.
Everything I've done is done on my own in research and kind of being my own coach. And so it put more pressure on me to have the surgery, spend the money.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, what was really easy became like I went back to normal, and that scared me because I didn't want that to be a failure and a waste of time. And so, but what it did do is it enabled me to kick into gear and find what I found, which was the whole Primal method.
Probably the lack of ravenous hunger would help from that surgery. So just that factor where you're really not as consumed by hunger, which is where most people end up, and those signals get
all sorts
out of whack.
Yeah. Two things. That, and the other thing is, any one meal, I cannot hurt myself.
Right.
I go with you. We go to a buffet. You and I go to a buffet, and you eat all you want. I could sit there and say, and I could go after it and make an attempt to eat all I want. I eat on little plates. I literally eat on small plates. And I think that in my mind, I've really retrained my mind to see that. And I put less food on them because I think of my mind's thinking the plate, you know, that looks a lot like a lot of food. But little things like that. But I will, you know, there's all kinds of hacks to going into restaurants to eat. And it's funny, I actually have a card from my physician that says that I can have kids meals. So because it says on there, you know, only for kids 12 and under or something, but I have an actual medical card that says if I want to order off the kids menu, it kind of pressures them into letting you order off the kids.
Sure.
Menu.
Whatever it takes.
No, I, that's the one great thing is we like to go eat when we celebrate birthdays and, you know, different holidays and that kind of thing. Even like Thanksgiving and having pies and those kind of things, I can partake of a pie, but it's a very slim it's a very thin slice, and not because I'm trying not to eat so much, it's because I can't eat it. I physically can't eat it. I cannot eat a big piece of pie. I may be able to choke it down. And I may just throw it back up. I mean, it's one of those deals. So I do have kind of a cheater cord on me that I can only eat so much. So that helps as well. But I don't get as hungry. My appetite would not near be as ravenous as I would if I hadn't had it.
Gotcha. And for anyone listening, and we've thrown carbohydrate numbers a couple of times, and we've thrown keto carbohydrate numbers. So if anyone
Bunch.
is starting to basically just think about the amount of carbohydrates they're taking in, we're also not saying carbs are bad. I mean, that's part of the literature. They have a purpose, but it's more so the primal model is if you can somewhere cap your carbohydrate intake around 150 grams, that's plenty. Like that is a sustainable weight management number. So for anyone who's like, I can't get down to 30, I'm at 300, you don't have to dip all the way down to 30 immediately. That you can, that's the
That's a
keto,
lot, yeah.
that's the keto style, and you're going to feel that. You can slowly, and this is what the Primal Health Coaching does, is tiptoe your way down to 150 and then keep going because you'll get curious at how much more weight or how much better you can feel as your body retrains itself. But when you come back up, like 150 is the sweet spot where you have plenty of energy. You're refueling all of your liver and muscle glycogen, so you're not depleting yourself, but you burn through that pretty quickly in your day. You know, that's only what, 600 calories. So most of what you're using is fat.
Well, and also the mental clarity.
Yes.
I did not know that I could feel the way I felt in when my brain started having ketones to started feeding off my and utilize my brain utilizing ketones. And I can't think of her name. There's an educator, a scientist. She's not heavy at all. In fact, she's never been heavy, but she is on a very low carb diet because the mental clarity she gets when she has that and she's on that, she can teach her students it's her sweet spot. And so she does it for mental clarity, which I had never heard that before for people doing that. But I do know that dementia does run in my family. And so one of the things I read along the same lines that this kind of diet it could be possibly, I'm not going to say it heals anything, but it could be possibly better for you to maybe help slow some things down for as you age and go through those steps. So anything that from a wellness standpoint that I can do it and it's in the primal health piece, I've been doing it.
Yeah, exactly. And people ask, but what type of diet is it? And the only thing that makes sense and that resonates with people where they know what I'm talking about, instead of going through, low carb has a wrap to it, much like vegan has a wrap to it, because some people have had poor experiences. I just say anti-inflammatory, which is where
Yes.
all of the benefits come from. That's where the mental clarity and the cognition comes from. It's if you're just not, we inflict inflammation and free radicals on ourselves every day, regardless, just by living, by going out into the world. So if you cannot do that by eating, but instead create an anti-inflammatory response from giving
Right.
your body bountiful time to recover, that's where the clarity comes from. That is your built-in natural clarity. Anything, any brain fog, any sluggishness on top of that is something interfering with your body's natural ability, which is the lens I look at things through. So whenever you're doing keto and you're running clean and you're kind of just humming along, that's your natural state. And then if you want to like tweak that for performance by adding some carbs, which is what a lot of the community has started doing, is they now look at carbohydrate modulation in terms of performance. Like if you've got a big event or if you're going to be going for a really long time, that's where they'll supplement almost with carbohydrates and just,
Now, do they do that? So I'm curious to that because I am training. You know, one of the things Mathtone always talks about is it's okay to go test yourself.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
It's okay to go out and just go full bore.
Right.
Don't worry about heart rate. And a lot of times you want to do the same interval so you can see how am I progressing as, you know, as time over distance.
Yeah.
And then with my heart rate.
Yep.
So my curiosity is around, because I haven't really played with that, is, you know, how do you start supplementing in a few more carbs? Do you do that like the night before?
You don't have to glycogen load. So that's what, that's the old paradigm. That's what I used to do for cross country. What a lot of the people are doing, specifically if they're fat adapted, and high intensity health is a good, well, DeLauer and high intensity health, both for this. That's Mike Mutzel. He's a clinical nutritionist and is pretty in that world, the metabolic flexibility world. It's simply like an hour or two before workout, simply to give yourself the excess quick energy to burn. You've already built the machinery, right? You're not going for, you know, they did fasted workouts long enough. People start adding in, it's called carb cycling. They'll start doing that, and it's not a huge amount. Like, they'll have some fruit or honey, something easily digestible, quick, so that they can have the best workout possible, because you tend to have a higher performing workout if you're truly testing yourself. Like, they're not doing, you know, 2 hours in the gym. This is a hard 30-minute session with a lot of energy expenditure, and you're crushing yourself on purpose. That's where that comes into play, where you just want to give your body that quick energy, because in a lot of those high intensity movements, fat just isn't metabolized fast enough.
Right.
So they were noticing, just, you know, maybe they were performing 10 or 20% less than they thought they could be. So they'll just start adding, DeLauer will eat watermelon as he's working out because it's so quick absorbing, like 30 grams or 50 grams, depending on how long you're going, of carbs, just to give your body that quick fuel source, rocket fuel almost, to use during the workout. And then that's it. You don't, you know, you're not, you don't have to load carbs after that or anything. It's literally just to give yourself a great workout.
That's cool. One of the things that when I am racing, it would help me if I had a little bit of that glycogen or the carb, not glycogen, but the carbs in the system to give me a little bit of a rev to get things going. I think that would be very interesting.
Yeah. People find they're missing a gear is usually the expression I hear, where if you're specifically training to be fat adapted or make sure you're in keto, it's great for longevity and it's great for overall performance. But if you need, it's kind of like a sports car. I mean, if you just need that extra RPM, carbs are basically rocket fuel. And that's their true purpose, is quick, dirty, burning energy. When you need it, that's what they're great for. And then the rest of the time, fat is your kind of your baseline. Yeah.
Because I saw where those ultra guys are still. One guy was just doing it with the water. I mean, he literally will drink, he'll drink water before he goes, and that's what he does. And he'll do a 50 miler.
You can condition yourself. I mean, I wouldn't do that right off the bat, but if you slowly work on building all of these mitochondria, like we're talking about, building all the machinery that make you a fat burning machine, and you condition yourself so that your body utilizes oxygen so well, so that you, even at that level, running 50 miles, you have bountiful oxygen. Yep. You'll just eat fat the entire time, as long as you stay within your own personal range. And you know, that person's 65% is probably my 100% still, or 80, whatever.
That's true.
So it's people are like, but there's ultra marathoners. Yeah. But they've conditioned themselves to be so oxygen efficient where they're cruising at 65% and just burning fat.
Right.
And that would kill most people.
Right.
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 Yeah. So it's the ability of the reason why I love doing this coaching is people start getting curious and tinkering with what their body can do whenever their cravings go away, or they have more energy, or the cognition, whenever some fundamental change happens and they're like, wait, what else have I been missing? And they start getting curious and digging. That's where they start unlocking. And that's what I love watching.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else that that you would like to, or actually, do you post any of your meals or anything, any part of your journey on social media?
A little bit. I did my training. My training for my marathons, I was putting my I run with my Garmin, and I track those workouts, and yes. I'll put it up there. I'll have how far I ran, my numbers, and I'll put my average heart rate, and gotcha. I always hashtag Maffetone method. And so if people are like, well, what is that? And so I have to explain it to them. And some people are interested in it. Other people are like, whatever.
Right.
But I've done this enough now, and I've done it both ways. There is something to it when you catch a day and you go all out and it's the right day and you've trained for it. It's like taking a car that hadn't been driven hard and yep. it needs to be driven hard. And it's yep. just amazing. You feel great and you run and you get you do a personal best and you come back and you may have gotten to 155, 160 on your average heart rate. However, your car's built for it.
Right. Yeah, we are built for stress. But like we said,
I didn't have that cortisol releases. All those things didn't happen to me because my body's trained for it.
Yep.
And I need to, this podcast for me will be kind of a coming out party for what I'm going to be doing. And I appreciate you allowing me to tag along with you. I'm a newbie. I'm still learning the ropes on these.
Hey, I'm a newbie too.
Podcast, yeah. But I'm never necessarily want to be, one of the subject of a podcast, but that I truly believe in this wholeheartedly that this is going to be a mission of mine. And I, at 55 years old, I still have aspirations of doing things. I play tennis. I'm in a tennis league once a week, so I get to play tennis and something I used to do as a college guy. And so to get back and have that ability to do that again, this has saved me to be able to do, yes. hitting a golf ball at 300 pounds, 320 pounds, and at 215 or 220 is just totally different. And having the muscle mass now to swing through and, they always talk about the guys who had the flat bellies. Well, I have a lot of loose skin. That's another topic for another day. Right. But that has been just it's been a saver for me. And so this is the start of my journey. I'm going to tag a lot of people on this because I want them to hear my story, I appreciate the ability to share it with you and hopefully the friendship I've got to meet you and we
moved. Oh yeah, it's been my pleasure.
I'm very interested in your water, so
that's something we can talk that's offline, another topic but, yeah
but that's,
I'll plug my other podcast on that one, so right. If anyone wants to learn more about the water, that podcast is called Abundance on Tap. I do that with my water partner, Ashley DeMarco. We'll be doing more episodes this week, but that has other, like we're talking about anti-inflammation, that is along that train of thought. Molecular hydrogen is the most potent anti-inflammatory we know of and requires zero barrier or changing anything other than your drinking water, which is the nice part. And similar stories to keto, where people just change their water and after 2 months, they lose 30 pounds.
That's crazy.
Ashley's mother-in-law had that happen. Just silly things like that. Yeah. Change nothing else, just that. But if someone has questions about your VGS journey or anything like that, what's your Instagram handle or what is the best way for them to ask?
Yeah, the best way on Instagram is hit me up at fat, F-A-T, the number two, fueled, F-U-E-L-E-D. Gotcha. At fat the fueled.
And I'll link that below.
Yeah. And so I'm going to try to get better about posting, but if people have had the sleeve surgery and you're finding yourself in a weird spot where what do I do next? Because I was losing, I'm not losing. I actually have backed up a little bit. That's who I'm trying to find and try to help kind of guide and put you in a position where you have ability, you have these tools that maybe can take you back to where you need to be and kind of finish the process. And so I'll have more to that. I'm literally on the last chapter of my certification. So once I get that done and I have that all that done, I'll be 100% minted primal health coach. And so that will, but I can help you here on some of these things now. And if I can't help, I definitely can get you in touch with people who can. So, yeah. And that's where, you know, it's a community. And yes. So, that's where, but yeah, they find me on Instagram, that Fat to Fueled they'll find me, and I'm going to be more diligent about posting and doing more with it now.
Well, I'm sure you'll just be able to help, like you said, with your friend at work. That's all that coaching is. I mean, at its simplest, it's
lot.
Just guiding.
Yeah.
Yep. It's accountability lot. And guiding.
Yep. Absolutely.
Well, I think you're going to help a ton of people, and I really appreciate your time today.
Yeah. I appreciate you having me on. Looking forward to do it again sometime.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have a lot to talk about because the research is ever evolving, and we're both, sounds like we're both metabolism nerds. So
absolutely.
There's so much to talk about. We can go in any other direction, but I will let you go today. And thanks so much for doing this.
All righty. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that podcast as much as I did. It's always apparent to me when I meet someone and they have that thirst for discovery of their own processes, discovering how their body works, what makes them feel optimally and have had transformative success with that. If you have any interest in impacting and helping people through primal health coaching, the institute that Dan and I are both part of is Primal Health Coach Institute. Links for that are down below. It's a fantastic compilation of literature, but most important, practical applications for consistent and sustainable lifestyle change. If you would like to connect with Dane for anything about his story, or if you're thinking about going into vertical sleeve gastrectomy, the procedure that he had, and might want a guide for the actual implementation afterward, that's what he is specializing in. His contact info will be below. You can reach him on Instagram at fat2fueled. That's FAT2FUELED.